A few months ago, I was invited to speak in Western Canada. When I told them that I was from Atlanta, some of the enthusiasm that came my way was because I live in the area where The Walking Dead is filmed. You're about to listen to a lesson on zombies. And if you're not familiar with it, The Walking Dead is one of the most popular zombie series that is out right now. I didn't even know it was filmed in the Atlanta area. There was a terrible accident at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and a virus got out. There is an epidemic that forever transformed the human race. And this is the background of this series, The Walking Dead. As I said, I had no idea it was even done in Georgia. But the interest in zombies is not just in the U.S. and Canada. It's all over the place. Have you ever watched that series? I had watched it a couple of times on TV, and then this year I was flying to Boston, and I was able to watch two more episodes. In fact, last week I met the friend of one of the principal actors, male actors in The Walking Dead. A few weeks ago, I was speaking at a conference for professional artists, musicians, actors, models, people in the arts. It's pretty much everything that I'm not. I may be a public figure, but I'm not particularly artsy, but they wanted me to do a chat. Well, after I spoke, the very next fellow is producing a movie on zombies. He's the director. In fact, we'll have lunch next month. Fascination has taken the world by storm. And I've been asking many people, what do you think about zombies? Or do you watch this series? Or have you seen that film? Just a few days ago, I taught the middle schoolers in our local church. Middle school means these kids were typically 10 years old, 12 years old. I did PowerPoint. I didn't want to scare them with too much gore. On the other hand, I needed to keep their attention, and I hope I found the right balance. By the way, being conversant with subjects like this is a great way to connect with the younger generation, to get into their hearts. And because of that, in the past, I've prepared lessons on werewolves and vampires, ghosts, different paranormal subjects. And it's not because I think that we have to watch out for zombies or because I believe in vampires, nothing like that. But this is a great way to begin discussions. And if you want to see some enthusiasm and you want engagement, follow the popular media. I don't mean you have to become a junkie, but I think we need to be aware of what's going on. Have you ever had a scary dream? I remember frightening dreams as a child. My dreams often involve being chased by bad guys, the mafia, the KGB, the Nazis, perhaps. A few months ago, I had my first ever vampire dream. This year, I had my first ever zombie dream. So what does that mean? I think it's in the culture, and it must be somehow getting into our minds, into the air that we all breathe. So what do you think about this? What are zombies? Are they human? Well, of course, in zombie lore, the zombie's more of an ex-human. It's one who's dead, but whose body is under the control of a malevolent spirit. And really, this has very much to do with the definition of humanity. I was at the doctor's office a couple months ago, and I asked the nurse, "Can I ask you a question about zombies?" And she laughed, smiled, and said, "Sure." And it turns out she's quite familiar with all the shows. I said, "Well, what do you think of this? Do you think it'd be wrong if you were, let's pretend, but you're in this zombie scenario. Would it be wrong to shoot one of them in the head?" She was really engaged. And interestingly, a couple minutes later, she said, "What about you, Douglas? Do you think it'd be wrong? Would it be wrong?" Now, she was asking me at this point, I think, more of a biblical question, an ethical question, because she knows I'm a Christian teacher. Would it be wrong? And I said, "First, it's fiction." Okay. So it's not real. And she said, "Oh yeah, that's right. It's just fiction." She was really into it. And so we don't really have to have a clear answer when we're talking just about fiction, but there is value in thinking about this. Are they human? What would you do if such a thing ever broke out? A few weeks ago, I was in Los Angeles. Very close to the place where we were staying was a boat. Painted on the side of the boat, zombies. A few months ago, I read an article in the popular magazine Christianity Today on zombies. It resonated with everything I've been thinking about. And I've been thinking about doing this podcast for quite a while. And it's not just because of The Walking Dead. Or the film that came out in 2007, you may remember, I Am Legend. Or let's go back a bit further. Michael Jackson's incredible video thriller with the dancing zombies. Or how about 1968, The Night of the Living Dead? I was a young boy when it came out. I was not even 10 years old. That was freaky. That was scary. You may think, wow, it's been out that long? We've been fascinated with zombies for 50 years. No, more than that. One of the big hits of the 20th century was called White Zombie, 1932. And when the U.S., Canada, Western Europe first became fascinated in the subject was actually the late 19th century. The original stories, as you probably know, come from Africa and from Africa to Haiti, but became very popular in Western culture more than a century ago. So why are people so fascinated with them? It can't be just because here's another monster story, another movie of the horror genre. There are plenty of those. And they all seem to be pretty much the same theme. Have you noticed it? You know, there's a biological catastrophe. There's a virus that spreads. And ultimately, someone you care about is bitten. And this was the specific question I asked the nurse in the doctor's office. I said, if it was someone you knew, someone you loved, a family member perhaps, who turned, as they put it, who became a zombie, what would you do? Would you kill it? And, you know, she stumbled, and I don't know. I say, this is not a human. It's an ex-human. And that isn't that the whole question? What is this we're learning? We're discussing and learning about the human condition. And hard circumstances make self-centeredness much easier to spot. When people are trying to survive, then we learn about grace. When choices must be made between the safety of our neighbor and that of a complete stranger, or looking after the welfare of our family versus someone you don't know who may even be one who poses a danger to you. In the zombie films, it's not really the zombies that you have to fear. It's the people. It's The Walking Dead, which you may not know this, but in that series, The Walking Dead aren't the zombies. They're the humans. Who do you have to fear? It's not so much these predictable machine-like zombies who basically take the role, they assume the function of the storm or the asteroid or the fire, the cataclysm of the typical disaster movie. They simply play that role. They're not human. What makes it interesting is how people under these various stresses interact with each other. And so those that we must fear, if we pretend the zombie scenario is real, let's realize it. Those we fear are other humans. Do you feel like you can trust other people? And I think this taps into a fear probably all of us have deep down, a fear of lawlessness. A breakdown of justice. That's a frightening thought. It certainly disturbed many biblical writers. The breakdown of justice. Irrational mobs on the prowl. That's a scary thing. But what's more scary are the survivors who try to take the law into their own hands. That is what is scary. Well, you may wonder, what does this have to do with the Bible? Well, quite a bit. I don't think you have to push very far to see how the symbolism of the living and the dead connects to biblical themes. There are three passages I thought of in particular. In fact, though you're probably older than the middle schoolers I spoke to just a few days ago, I'm going to use exactly the same Bible passages. If you were guessing, what would the first one be? What would you think of? I've asked a number of adults that question, and a typical answer is, the Valley of Dry Bones. Remember that one? Where the Lord spoke to Ezekiel, Son of man, can these bones live? The Valley of Dry Bones. It's in Ezekiel 37. I'm going to read part of it, but I'm simply paraphrasing. The valley was full of bones, and they were very dry. And the Lord asked me, can these bones live? Say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. I prophesied. There was a rattling noise, and the bones came together bone to bone. And as I looked, there were tendons on them and flesh and skin, but there was no breath in them. So I prophesied, and the breath came into them, and they lived and stood on their feet, an enormously large army. I will put my spirit in you, and you shall live. Now here, the metaphor is that of they're not corpses, they're just bones. But the reconstituted bodies represent Israel, whose national life has died. Israel, who are, in a sense, spiritually dead, they're captive, and God is going to bring them back, so to speak, bring them back to their country, bring them back from captivity, in a sense, breathe the life into them again. So it's not actually directly an image of the last resurrection, what you and I will probably be taking part in, assuming that we're not alive on the earth when the Lord returns. We'll be resurrected. So it's an image of the last resurrection, but it's not really what it's about. It suggests it, but it's about Israel being resurrected. Israel coming back from the dead, so to speak, in a whole new world for them, a new heaven, a new earth. It's a similar image you see at the end of Isaiah. But that's quite a picture, isn't it? And I want you to think about that while we talk about the second passage. And I'm simply going to read the end and ask you if you remember where this comes from. I'll only give you the hint that it's from the Gospel of Luke. And here's the hint. Your brother was dead, and now he's alive. He was lost, and now he's found. Many of you will recognize that as being the conclusion of the parable of the lost son, or the prodigal son. Prodigal simply means wasteful, the younger son who wasted his inheritance. Though in this story, at the end, the younger son is actually not the lost son at all. There's a twist. There's irony. But here, a spiritual condition is referred to as death. He's not literally died, but in the passage, he's dead, but now alive. Think about this as we go to the final passage. And this is the Apostle Paul. Once again, I paraphrase, this time from Ephesians 2. He made you alive. When you were dead through your sins, we all used to live by the passions of our flesh, following the desires of body and mind. But God, who is rich in mercy, out of great love, even when we were dead, made us alive together with Christ. You hear those words? Alive, dead, dead, alive. We did nothing to deserve his helping us. It is God's gift. He planned for us to get busy following his will, doing the things he has planned for us. And again, my paraphrase of Ephesians chapter 2, going from death to life. And what is it that kills us? It's not being bitten by another zombie. It's not contracting some terrible disease, a virus that transforms our brain and makes us crave human flesh, nothing like that. But it's from sin. Paul mentions the passions of our flesh, following the desires of the body and mind, things that really make you and me behave like animals. Animals who don't think before they act, who simply live by impulse, who see and want, and so they take. And then, of course, they say there's nothing wrong with what I've done. Similar to the leech's daughters in the book of Proverbs, that animal level the lower self, the sinful nature, what the Bible calls the flesh. And this is what makes us dead in sin. And yet God is rich in grace, and He will transform us amazingly. And so even if we've been bitten, so to speak, we've turned, the light has gone out of our eyes, and we're shocking ourselves and others what we're doing, in a sense, we become less human. We've lost something of the image of God. Even though that's happened, there's a fresh start available in Christ. There is healing that is possible. This is amazing. What a thought. And see, the discussion of zombies can open the mind and heart for this discussion to take place for the presentation of the gospel. And so I like to share four conclusions with you. These are my observations. You might have some different ones, and I hope you will go farther than this, which I would consider just to be introductory. One, when it comes to the zombie genre, it's not just about survival. It's about community and trust and beauty. The zombie scenario is typically an apocalyptic scenario, is full of fear, darkness, ugliness. Everything's disintegrating, not just the corpses, but human society and love. What humans insist on recreating in these contexts is community. We want community. Leadership structures emerge, trust and beauty. And in the midst of hardship, we see what's truly valuable. So it's not about survival. It's about trust. It's about community. It's about what's good, which means that these are great openers for conversations. Asking people if they've been following the zombies, the zombie films, is a great way to talk about things that we're all interested in, relationships. Second conclusion, we were dead in sins. If you don't really feel that you were ever dead, that you crossed over from death to life because of Jesus Christ, as he puts it in John 5, or as Paul put it in Ephesians 2, if you don't appreciate that you were dead, you were lost, but now you're alive, you're found, then I think it's a fair question. Have you actually been filled with God's Spirit? Are you just dry bones, or are you alive? Are you on your feet, a member of God's army, so to speak, prepared to do the things the Lord's prepared for us? Are you busy? Have you gone through that transformation? And especially, I've got to ask myself, how much do I appreciate salvation? Salvation is not just something that happens one time, or even two times if you want to be spiritual. Oh, yes, I was saved when I was baptized. Oh, but truly, I was saved on Calvary. I think we could do more than that. Because the Apostle Peter said to the group, save yourselves from this corrupt generation. So the emphasis is not just on saving ourselves from hell or saving ourselves from ourselves, because we are our own worst enemy, wouldn't you agree? The biblical emphasis is actually on saving ourselves from the corrupt generation, which means that we need to be saved every day. Every day I need the Lord to save me. Think about that. I think it's a biblical perspective. We were dead in sins, and that old self will not stay dead and will be locked in a battle, in a sense, till the day we die. But we can live a life of victory. This morning in my personal study, I was reading Romans 6, 7, and 8, those beautiful chapters about how we can cross from death to life, how God has planned for us to take part in Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. And the old self is crucified, and we can live, because of this, a victorious life in the Spirit. So, one, it's not just about survival, but about community and trust, so forth. Two, we were dead in sins. Three, this follows on closely. And we're not, in a sense, fully alive until we're connected with our Creator. Until we're connected with God through Jesus Christ, we're not fully alive. We've not experienced what He has for us to experience. And finally, and this may be a shock, it could even be offensive, but it's biblical. Finally, the villains aren't the zombies. Oh no. The villains aren't the zombies. They are us. You and I are the zombies, and apart from Christ, we are the walking dead.